boys?
What's up, boys?
We were talking about Prime, his presser today.
Have you guys heard this presser yet?
I've only heard one clip about why he doesn't go in-home to recruits.
Yep.
We're here early for a meeting, so I have not heard a lot of it.
So the one we were just talking about that's kind of wild is he thinks that, hypothetically, if Shadur was in this class, he'd be the second QB off the board. That Caleb Williams would go one and Shadur Sanders would go two. He'd go ahead of Jaden Daniels. He'd go ahead of Drake May. I told Josh, if I'm a Broncos fan, that makes me think, well, if he's better than those guys, maybe 3-14 wouldn't be all that bad. Because then Shadur Sanders in 2025 doesn't sound like the end of the world.
You know, I understand why we talk like this and have these conversations. But in the NFL, it's the one place where I don't think you can look more than a year ahead. I just don't think you can do that. It's Shadur Sanders is not Joe Burrow. Shadur Sanders is not, he's not Andrew Luck. He is not one of these guys that you forecast 2 years ahead of time. He's a fine player. That's getting a little carried away, in my opinion, from his dad.
I don't know. The young man is really, really talented. Okay, and he honestly does fit someone like Sean Payton's system because he is one of those quarterbacks that will stay in the pocket. He processes things now. He doesn't get the ball out of his hands fast enough yet.
Agreed.
Right? That's one of his downfalls.
It does say sticky, like Russ a lot.
Exactly. And I don't know if that's because of the offensive linemen, if that's because of the receivers. Now, you're dealing with better offensive linemen in the NFL. You're dealing with better receivers.
Yep.
Okay? So Coach Prime going on the record and saying something like that, that's not crazy, man.
I don't think it's crazy because Mel Kiper said if he was in this class, he'd be a first rounder.
Yeah.
So all Deion's saying is he'd be higher up than.
Yeah.
Look what we've seen JJ McCarthy rise. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Shador's a worker. Like, that's one thing. Like, Shadur works at his craft. This is not a guy who's, last guy in, first guy out. So I guess you never know. But look, he's going back to school. We'll see. In terms of Deion. Yeah, this being his last year, why would he release the book after just his first year of a 4-win season?
Cash rules everything around me. Grain, get the money. Dollar bills, y'all.
Yeah, I like it.
Why? Isn't it cream?
That's what I said.
You said green.
Cash rules everything around me.
Cream. Yes.
Get the money. Dollar
bills. You
dollar
said bill. Green. Check maybe the tape. Yeah. But anyway.
That's why he did it, though.
Maybe you're right. But Deion, can you release that book when you're leaving coaching and after only 2 years? I think there's enough buzz and hype around Deion still where you can get away with releasing that book with a 4-8 record. But you can't get away with taking a picture up in Folsom Field with the title Elevate and Dominate if you've gone 4-8 twice.
Okay.
I think that the timing of it, I think the timing of it is interesting for me because you did. You literally finished in last place in the league and you released a book that says Elevate and Dominate, how to win 21 ways on and off the field as you take a picture in the place that you finished at last. I think that's unusual.
I think that I understand what you're saying, but I think we would be the only ones to see it that way because outside of this market, Prime is the dude on College Game Day, the dude talking junk to other coaches, the dude that created his own sunglasses blind, that has a book, that has a documentary on Prime.
Shoes.
He's more of that. To us, he's a coach and then that. To everybody else, he's that and then a coach.
But I think you can get away with that for a year. I think this time next year, if they fall short again, the narrative around Prime, I think, will shift as a coach. Prime will always be Prime. Like he's a legend. He is a legend.
Just ask him.
but I think they're going into a new league and everything like this. But I think if they fall short again, I think the louder voices of who is this guy as a coach.
So with that being said, are you saying that Deion will not be here the next year after that?
Deion is done. Deion is done. This is Deion's last year. He is done.
This is not going to be Deion's last year. It's not. One, because Deion is all about himself. He's getting a lot of attention. He won 4 games, and he's still one of the highlighted coaches in college football.
It's true.
Yeah, but Phil, as I just pointed out a few minutes ago, he's also having legitimate health problems that none of us are trying to downplay, and that could factor into it as well. I've made all the money in the world. My sons are in the NFL, and I want to go watch them on Sundays and not worry about coaching my own team on Saturdays.
But you're talking about Deion Sanders. Number two, he's a prideful man. And if he loses again and then dips out, everybody's going to look at him differently than if he comes back and tries to find a way to get out of that mud, come back, and be the comeback man of the year kind of situation.
See, this is why he has to win.
Yeah.
Because you can't tell me you have the number two quarterback in this draft, and he is coming back to school and you not win. You're the coach. Your quarterback is the man. You're telling me he's better than four of the five first-round draft picks and you can't win in the Big 12?
But then talk to Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes didn't win a lot over there in Texas Tech.
Very true.
And although he didn't win a lot, that man is the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yep. No, it's true. It's true. But I think there's something to be said that if you think you're the man and you're the coach and you release a book, How to Elevate and Dominate, and your son is the best quarterback in the country, if you're the man as a coach and you have the best quarterback in the country and you don't play in the SEC or Big Ten, you better win. You better win, Phillip. You better win.
Talk to Patrick Mahomes. He wasn't in the SEC.
And I know. He had one. Pat Mahomes had one season over 500, and he was 7-6.
Mm. Damn.
Zach is also the book police, though. We have to notice that.
Oh, yes.
Zach hates poorly timed released books.
Yes.
This Case Keenum book. Oh my gosh! I had years and years he disliked Case Keenum releasing a book, and now he's on Prime for his book release.
Don't forget.
Going to be posted up outside Barnes & Noble's with like a sign.
Here at the station at the time, I was the most bullish on Keenum. I was the most bullish on Keenum at the time because he had just, I was looking to steady, looking for a steadying force, not a, you know, ultimate top five quarterback. And I'm like, Keenum is a steadying force. Keenum is going to, because at that time it was like, Broncos still have a great defense. All they need is a competent quarterback. That's what I thought Case could be, and he wasn't. But I wanted to mention that because I was critical of the guy I was most high on because he dropped that book week one of the NFL season. Week one. This is your first opportunity, Case, to be a franchise quarterback. And a book is very personal. You know, he's writing about his life almost like as if his journey was over. It's like, dude, you're releasing a book the week of the most important year of your life is getting started. I don't like the dividing of the focus. Russell Wilson, what did he do? Month that the season started, he's opening up a brick and mortar store in Lone Tree Mall. I was like, what are you doing? You don't make enough money here? Like, focus on the task at hand. So I like to stay consistent across the board. Case in his book, Prime, or Russ in his store, and this book from Prime tell me how to elevate and dominate when you finish dead last in the conference.
I actually agree with you, but I'm going to push back for a second. How much work do you think those three gentlemen are actually doing for Case's book, for Prime's book, and for Russ's store to open up? Are they doing anything? Are they signing an email?
I'll rank them. Case put the most time and energy. It was such a personal thing.
Yeah.
It was such a personal thing. It was like him overcoming and then a ghostwriter, I'm sure. And then it goes, Russ in his store and the launch of his freaking clothing line, and then Prime last, who probably talked for like 2 hours with a guy, and they were like, put all my words together in this book.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did.
How to elevate and dominate. 21 ways to win on and off the field when you finish on a 6-game losing streak and dead last in the conference. I'm sorry. That's not funny.
I guess you haven't bought the book, huh?
Oh, pre-order. Zach's going to buy the book.
I just think it's funny. Not a lot of coaches release book after finishing dead last. What did you guys, I'm sorry, I got to keep it real. What did you guys, before we get out of here, give me your snapshot thought about a Colorado State and what they did last night.
Absolutely loved what they did. Outside of, I felt like they were stuck 4-2 for like 4 minutes, 5 minutes of the first half, and then it was all Colorado State. I didn't know a ton about Neat Clifford, but I love that young man's game.
Hey, he was at the golf tournament we were at, dude, in the summer.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What jerks we are.
Really nice. No, you. You. Oh. I was nice to him. I had a great conversation with him.
All right, what a jerk I am. No,
really nice
I
kid.
Wish
sorry,
told me.
Sorry. Sorry.
Now, how tall is the man?
He's like 6'6".
6'7"?
Yeah, 6'7".
See, TV doesn't do them justice.
No.
Especially in college.
But I love the fact, like, that young dude recognized I have a mismatch on the three. Pick the three guys that are guarding me.
Yeah.
I'm better than all of them. And it didn't matter. This guy's on me. I can work him in the post. I'm going to back down and get it. This guy's guarding me. He leaves me alone in the corner. I'm going to stand there and knock down some shots. His recognition of how to win that specific game and his matchups,
yeah,
it was beautiful, man. That I was so impressed with Nate Clifford.
Well, and my big takeaway, and Virginia's getting a lot of flack today, rightfully so. I mean, the national media is dunking all over him. What is the committee doing? How in the world were they in the tournament?
As they should.
Virginia stinks. I'll say that. Virginia is terrible. I'll say that. We also can't fall in the trap of taking credit away from CSU.
Correct.
In a 25-point win.
For sure.
The Rams were awesome last night. Two things can be true at the same time.
I like that. Will Paterson.
Drop the mic.
You know what? Last night was a special night for Colorado State, and they keep their season alive. But it was a special night across the board last night, and that's where I want to start with Phil coming up next.
I won't lie to you. I know he's just not right for you. And you can tell me if I'm off, but I see it on your face when you say that he's the one that you want.
What a special night in Colorado sports last night. For three different reasons. And I'm curious what we think is the most impactful from last night, because there's three legitimate things that happened last night. They're not just run-of-the-mill. It wasn't just a run-of-the-mill Tuesday, Phil. It was not. You had Colorado State in the NCAA tournament getting a win. You had the Denver Nuggets going to Minnesota and creating separation from themselves, and now they're finally on top of Minnesota for really like the first time this season, for all intents and purposes. Yeah, no, it has been the first time this season. And then you have the Colorado Avalanche going on the road against a rival who's desperate for a win, and not only winning, but sweeping a four-game road trip and winning a season-long seventh in a row. So each of these wins last night were significant in their own ways.
Yeah, they were very significant in their own ways. I think every single one of them took a identity of their own. Now, when I'm looking at the Avs game, I was really, really encouraged, okay? When I was looking at the Colorado State game, I was excited for them.
Yeah.
I seen a fire in them that, you know, a lot of people have seen at the beginning why they were ranked number 13 at one point, and I think it's coming along for them. Although they played against a Virginia team, that's not their fault.
Right. Right.
You know? That's not their fault. They were prepared. Virginia was not.
Yeah.
Okay. And then for the Denver Nuggets, I don't know. You know, last time, Zach, you came walking in the studio and you're like, I was encouraged even though we lost.
Yes.
You know, you felt good.
After the Mavericks lost.
For sure.
Yeah.
It was the opposite for me this time. I didn't feel so good about this win. All right? I didn't feel so good getting off my couch saying we won. Yeah, we did win.
Yeah.
You know, we did win.
Yeah.
But also, it wasn't a good win. You know, sometimes you can win a game, but still lose that battle. And I think that's what the Denver Nuggets did last night.
Yeah. I really like that. Kind of the inverse of Sunday's buzzer-beating shot where so much stuff goes wrong for the Nuggets, in addition to just a lack of competitive spirit, and they have a chance to win still somehow with seconds left. I like that, because that was hard to watch, that second half, and particularly that third quarter. That was hard to watch after scoring 70 in the first half. They scored 17 in the third.
Yeah.
I believe the most impactful win of the three awesome feathers in Colorado sports fans' caps is the CSU win.
Mm.
Because you lose that game, the season's over. And you know, for as much as people want to say, hey, you know, it's not the NCAA tournament, it's the play-in, I don't know, man. Like, felt like an NCAA tournament effort. That was a fun atmosphere. You lose, it's curtains for you and your season. And the fact that they went out there and beat Virginia out of the ACC, and everyone's saying, you know, Virginia's so bad, so bad. I watched Virginia go on an 8-game winning streak within the ACC this year. Like, that happened this year. And I think it looks as bad as it as it did by the time that the clock hit zero, 67-42, and it's a 25-point win because Virginia wasn't up for the task, but also Colorado State was just that damn good. And I think both of those things lived in the same universe last night in Dayton.
Well, see, this is the thing with me, and it's with a lot of people. I think that people look at it, and you said it yesterday, Zach, I'm going to put you on the spot. You talked about the ACC,
yep.
And we know it's a basketball kind of bracket part with them, right?
Yeah, yeah. The ACC is a long-standing traditional conference.
But you've been sitting in that seat, all right, farting in that seat, talking about how good the Mountain West is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, talking about how good the Mountain West can be and that there should be six or even seven teams that should be going to the March Madness from the Mountain West.
I had to kind of correct Dover last week where he kind of
you did.
Throw a little shade. He's like, oh, the powerhouse in the Mountain West. I'm like, hold on a second. They're going to send six teams. Send it six teams. And that team that finished sixth in the conference from the Mountain West, Virginia finished third. Do we know that? Like, everyone's saying how bad Virginia is. Virginia finished third in the ACC. Mm. And they weren't even close to being competent or up enough to share the same court with the Rams last night.
Yeah, so for people saying, well, oh, Virginia's not a good team. Yeah, they're not a good team. Not like they used to be, right? They're in a down year.
Yep.
But that's not CSU's fault.
No.
That's not CSU's fault.
Nope.
CSU went in there and showed why they disrespected them.
Yeah. Yep.
Show them why. Why did we have to pretty much play a play-in game?
Yeah, right.
With Virginia. That's not on our level.
Right. No, I like that. I like that. But but people are talking about Virginia as if they let in the little sisters of the poor. They finished third in the ACC behind only Duke and North Carolina. So I was like, hold on a second. Now, but again, when CSU plays that well, I mean, I was just so impressed. I said to you yesterday at one point in the show, I said, I don't have a great feeling about this because, you know, it feels like a tale as old as time when one of these, non-Power 5 schools gets into the NCAA tournament, plays a team that does finish third in the ACC, and they just flex the bigger, stronger, faster muscles. It's just a different caliber of athlete. And what was last left in my head was 3 years ago was when CSU had a phenomenal season, very similar to this year, like 25 wins or so, and they went in the NCAA tournament as a legit favorite over Michigan, who was having a down year. Michigan won by double figures. I mean, CSU had an NBA player, bona fide NBA guy in David Roddy. They couldn't solve Michigan. And that was, I think I actually held that. Although I never said Colorado State was going to lose. I didn't have a great feeling about it. And I think I held the bias of what I saw in the last NCAA tournament against them and was so pleasantly surprised with how well they played, man. I mean, credit that Nico Medved, that program, and they did it on a night where Isaiah Stevens doesn't even have a big game.
No, Isaiah Stevens did not have a big game. But the whole team as a whole, as a collective group, they all played well together. And they attacked Virginia.
They did.
You know, Virginia is used to having that aggressive defense, and they were going to play defense, play slow ball, grind things out. But Colorado State played fire with fire. They attacked the paint, okay? They rebound better than Virginia, and they were able to get shots to fall at the right times. Now, the first half, it was a boring half, Zach, to be completely honest with
you. Not if you had the under.
You're right about that.
120. Hey, I told our audience, I said, this is going to be a rock fight.
You did?
And you went to the first break, and it was like 15 27-14. Minutes. 27-14. Yeah, it was 27-14. 14 points at halftime.
Zach, your son scored 16 points.
Yeah, no, he had 14.
Oh.
This last week.
Come on now, hype him up a little bit.
I got to keep it real.
Well, okay, 14 points, as much as Virginia scored. That's a hole.
I didn't think about it like that.
we're talking about college basketball.
Wow.
Getting into March Madness.
Yeah.
And they scored 14 points in the first half.
And you want to know what? Yes, Virginia struggles offensively. Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean Colorado State didn't also play great defense.
They played really good defense.
This is like both things are true. Like, Virginia, the basketball version of Iowa football, right? You saw the shirt, that guy who's going viral. That was amazing. But defensively, Colorado State, whatever hope Virginia did have offensively, they strangled the valve off. I mean, I was so impressed with the on-ball defense, the rotations, help. I mean, it was great. It was great.
Great movement. Great movement. And yep. Virginia just were, you know, they were not a match for someone like Colorado State. But people tend to forget Colorado State, and I keep saying it, they were ranked 13, correct, Zach? At one point.
At one point, they're the 13th ranked team in the country, yeah.
You're not going to just be ranked low like that if you're not good. Now, yeah, there was times where they were not playing well. And also, they had some heart-ending plays where they got beat at the last second.
Yes.
You know?
A couple times, yes.
And so that kind of hurt you at times. But overall, Colorado State played a really, 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 really good game against a tough team. They're just not better than Colorado State. Virginia is not better than Colorado State.
And I got to give a shout out to two guys. Joel Scott, that kid who scored 23 points last night, and Patrick Cartier. Both of those guys transferred from the Division II level and are contributing in a meaningful way in the NCAA tournament against an ACC team.
Uh-oh.
And then mentioned Nick Clifford, too, transferred out of Colorado to Colorado State. That's unusual. And to have him show out, that kind of validates, I think, that move of his. I'm happy for that kid. All right, there is something special brewing. In addition to CSU, with a team and a player in Denver sports, and that's where we'll head coming up next. Woo! Off and rolling on a hump day. Hopefully you're having a fantastic day. Thanks for making us a small part of your Wednesday.
I thought you were Ric Flair for a second.
Woo! If you go to a wrestling event and, you know, there's like down periods when you're not live on TV, you know, so they'll like go to commercial break and there'll be like, you know, 60 seconds of just no programming or 3 minutes, and there'll be someone in the crowd go, woo! And then you'll hear 2,000 people respond with that same way. It's like too funny. It's like niche wrestling culture.
Do they do the wave over there?
No, not so much. Not so much. You know, going to the last break, Phil, I said there's something special brewing with a team and a player. Mm. And you could be talking about a handful of things right now in Colorado sports, because we got some pretty cool stuff going on, and this is a fun time to be doing this job. But the guy that we're talking about for this particular moment is the Denver Nuggets, who have just absolutely kicked the door down coming out of the All-Star break. I mean, just in a way that is, similar to a year ago. And just, they are on a mission. And they went into the All-Star break 36-19. Okay. Remember they lost that game against Sacramento where they blew like a 16-point lead? It was the last game before the break.
Oh, yeah, it was spring break.
It was spring break, a little senioritis.
They were ready to leave.
They were 36-19 going into the break. Phil, they're 48-21. I mean, this team is on such a roll, and Michael Porter Jr. is actually one of the straws that's stirring the drink. And the fact that it feels like he's doing it nearly every single night is, wow, what a turn here.
It's crazy that we're talking about Michael Porter Jr. If we would rewind what we used to say about Michael Porter Jr. at the beginning of the year, you know, in the middle of it.
Yep.
And now, it's like we're eating our words, especially me, right? Especially me. But Michael Porter Jr. has found himself at the right time when we need him the most down this stretch, getting ready to go into the playoffs. The confidence is there, and it showed yesterday in the fourth quarter.
How about that? It's like when they needed him down the stretch of the game, he had one of his single best quarters of the entire season in the fourth quarter on the road on the heels of a inept third quarter, and that was a big game that now separates them, and they are now in the two seed.
Zach, when was the last time MPJ took over a game in the fourth quarter? When?
It's happened before, because I know of other double-digit scoring efforts, but that was unique. That was against a team that they struggled with. That was a rematch of the playoffs. That was for the two seed. That was on the road. So all that context together was really important.
And not only was he on a heater, but he brought the Nuggets back, right? He was that spark. Usually we're talking about Jokic, which Jokic had a great game.
Yeah, right? Oh yeah.
Jamal Murray got everybody involved. I think he had 11 assists.
He did.
Right? He's doing something that's different in Jamal's game, is getting everybody involved, which I love to see.
Yeah.
But MPJ, 7-0 run, finds a way to get the Denver Nuggets back on top. We talked about MPJ maybe two games ago, and we were like, why did they go away from MPJ?
Yes, I thought of that conversation last night.
This time, they said, we're going to ride you for a little while.
Yeah.
That's trust. That's what I love to see. And MPJ needs to continue this. I feel like every time MPJ steps on the court now, he's getting 20 points.
Yeah.
You know, he started the first half, I think he had 10.
Yep.
All of a sudden, he's sitting there at 26 points.
Yeah. And we were reacting to the game that you're thinking of was the Dallas game. Because remember, I think he had 12 points in the first quarter.
First quarter, yep.
And we talked about how the game just kind of sometimes just steers away from him naturally. And we talked about that, you know, not having a domineering personality that demands it without even saying it. The coaching staff not going out of their way to make sure it happens. Jokic and Jamal getting so focused on their just longstanding trust of their two-man game to, in crunch time, reincorporate Michael Porter Jr. We talked about all that on Monday. So it was really unique to see on a Tuesday night in a high leverage moment, in a high leverage game, Michael Porter Jr. being such a big part of the game plan, while there was big chunks of that fourth quarter where Jamal did not come back into the game. And we were watching two-man game between Jokic and MPJ. And I literally thought of our conversation on Monday.
I love what Malone did with that. He let MPJ kind of roll with the punches, but also he's trying to figure out what kind of combinations he could come out with when it does come down to the playoff time. So it's not just Jokic and Jamal Murray having to carry the load and being out at the same time. Can Jamal Murray get a breath why Jokic and MPJ play together? Can Jokic get a breath why Jamal Murray and MPJ play together? Like, that's only going to make us more deadlier, okay, and a harder team to beat down the stretch. So I love what Malone did with that. And it was a good win. But it wasn't a win that I came today with and saying, okay, I feel good. And maybe it's just because I hold them to a high standard because they've won a championship. And it's about having a championship mindset all the time, okay? And looking at what the Timberwolves were dealing with was there three key pieces not there playing?
Yes, yes.
Three of those key pieces were not playing.
No Karl Anthony Towns.
Big time.
No Rudy Gobert. No Naz Reid.
Mm.
All a really big deal. All a really big deal. And that's why, and reasonable minds can disagree on this, but that's why I say I'd rather just have those guys play. Because if everyone's playing, I don't think they have that mental letdown because there's no space for it.
Yeah.
There's no room for it. You're still in a fist fight because you know they got their dudes. And, you know, the score was like, I think it was 70-55 at halftime. And I'm like, that was what I wanted to see in that first half. Like,
for sure,
they're going to blow these guys out. They came in with that mindset. That third quarter was very hard to watch. 17 total points and just a lack of interest, lack of focus, lack of competitive spirit.
Well, why? Why do you think that the third quarter, Zach, is when everything kind of hit the fan? You know, they kind of collapsed a little bit.
I think it's just honestly natural human elements when you don't feel threatened. And without those guys playing, and because they came out like a ball of fire, I just think they naturally put their guard down. Like, we're good, we got this. And then you get outscored 29-17. Anthony Edwards is hitting shots. The place is going crazy. He's waving on the crowd. I mean, and let me just say him.
Advantage.
That's a bad boy. That is we talked about this on Monday.
Yeah.
If you have the whole league on the sideline like a pickup game and you're starting a franchise, there aren't five players that are going ahead of 22-year-old Anthony Edwards. He's a kid, yet he is a man, and he is going to be a hard cover over a course of a seven-game series. If these two teams meet, man, and they're fully healthy, which I'm assuming they will be, by the second round, if that's the collision course that we're on, the Nuggets are going to win, but there's going to be some doubt creeping in on some nights because that is a real basketball team.
Well, here's my takeaway. Okay, one, starting with the third quarter, they got away from Jokic. The first half, all right, Jokic was all in. I mean, the man didn't even have an assist.
I know,
he was trying to just take over the game by himself. That third quarter, they got away from Jokic. That's one of the reasons why they built the lead up anyway. Okay? Okay, Anthony Towns is not there right now. All right. But if he was back, well, what's going on in the other, you know, the other two key pieces were there? I don't think we win that game,
no,
Zach.
I don't think so either. Not with that third quarter. Nope. Nope. But I also don't think the mental focus wanes if those other dudes are there. So I think both things are true.
Okay.
But like with that same effort that they had last night, if they had their dudes, no, Nuggets aren't winning that game. No. So I understand. I understand why you would walk away like, glad we got the win on paper, but if you actually watch the game and how it unfolded in the second half.
It was almost a buzzer beater again.
I know.
I was like,
and as the ball was going in the air, I thought he was going to make it. So, okay, CSU wins a tournament game. The Nuggets move past Minnesota for the 2 seed, and yet none of those teams have the title of the hottest team in their sport. That's coming up next.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. This is why. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Colorado State won a game in the tournament.
This is why.
The Denver Nuggets went to Minnesota and won and pulled ahead of the T-Wolves for the 2 seed. And yet none of those teams have the title of the hottest team in their sport.
Woo!
Holy jumping! The Avs, they refuse to slow down.
This is why the Avs is hot.
Holy smokes, they hot. Dude. The Avs are so fun right now. They are just a joy to watch. And they now have their longest win streak of the season at 7 games after going into rival St. Louis.
Let's go.
Rival team, rival goaltender. History there. They're fighting for their playoff life. So you got a full desperate Blues team, and they walk away, the Avs do, with a 4-3 victory.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Look, the Colorado Avalanche is the team to beat. And this is the reason why. They swept on the road.
Crazy. That's hard to do,
4-0.
Man. That's hard.
Zach, you were crying a month ago. About a 1-5, 1-6 road tour where they did not do well.
Yeah, was that a 5-gamer or 6-gamer? I think it was 5. It was 6 games.
It was
they went
1-5.
The one win, I think, was an overtime win over New York Rangers.
Yeah, it's that East Coast trip. It's always so difficult.
Yeah. But here they are, man. And excuse me, I said over the Rangers, it was over Washington. That was their lone win on that road trip. And yeah, I mean, that was when it's like, when's Val coming back? Like, are trades need to be made. And let me just say, you know, we heard folks suggest, you know, should the Avs trade Mikko Rantanen?
No.
That was actually being discussed. And
Shame on them.
Sounds silly after a night like last night.
Yeah, look, I know at times Mikko can go MIA, right?
It's true.
He can go MIA. But last night, that was not the case.
Hat trick for Mikko. I mean, that was just so fun. 7th career hat trick. And he now has 37 goals. And it's like you look up, like, damn, like 37. The hat trick ties him with Peter Forsberg and Owen Nolan for the 4th most hat tricks in the history of the franchise. And Bednar talked about the big night for Mikko.
I thought at times our team was probably a little too selective on their shots. Passed up on a few, got a little fancy, got a little perimeter at times, which led to some of those turnovers I talked about. But Mikko wasn't one of those guys that it felt like today when he got a chance in the house that he was going to let it go and gets rewarded for it.
Love it for Mikko. Love it for the team.
Yeah.
It wasn't too long ago. We're talking about how concerning the home and away splits were.
Yeah.
Where they were a Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, we're making that analogy. And let me ask you the question, how much have they settled your stomach in that conversation?
I feel comfortable now. I feel comfortable for us to go on the road and find ways to win. And it's because of who we brought in. All right? The Sean Walkers, the Casey Mittelstadt.
Yeah.
Casey Mittelstadt's playing out his mind as well.
He really is.
Very, very talented man. Great with the passing, great touch. Got him a goal yesterday. And you know what? Shout out to your boy for lying to us. I'm just going to have to put that out there. He tried to lie to us, Zach. Big body.
So on the day, let me just catch our listeners up if they missed it, because it was just one time. It was the day of the trade.
Yeah.
And, you know, Casey Mittelstadt came over from Buffalo, and I got some buddies back there who are big Sabres fans, bless their heart. And, and they said, hey, big body, talking about Casey Mittelstadt, big body, plays like a wussy. Except they didn't say wussy.
Exactly.
Now, he's not the most physical guy.
No.
But he is a perfect fit for this group.
Perfect fit for this perfect scheme. Okay, you got Val back. He's a big body. And we know he ain't a wussy. You know what I'm talking about. But overall, they're playing great hockey together, right? They're finding ways to win. I know Nathan MacKinnon feels like he doesn't have to do as much as he was before everybody, you know, was not with the team.
Yeah.
And it just feels good. We, you know, we went on the road, had a four-game road trip, and came out on top. And now we get to come back to Ball Arena where you know it gets cracking.
Yeah, so winning four in a row on the road is hard to do. Winning seven in a row in the best professional hockey league in the world is hard to do. Talked about it yesterday with you. It just feels like I'm watching, and this is anecdotal, okay? But I'm watching guys smile, and MacKinnon in particular this last few weeks. This is a group that's gelling. The energy around the trip the group is just fantastic. And Bednar talked about this great road trip.
The team was resilient. We played hard, you know, like had some really good games in there and long stretches of games that were probably some of the best that we've seen all year long, like to our identity. New guys adding into the mix certainly have a lot to do with that.
And the new guys have been perfect fits. The re-implementing of Val Nichushkin has been a perfect fit. You know, on nights where Mikko wakes up, like, you know, in that way, it's just so fun to watch. So, and then you look at this, you know, this winning streak in general, you know, outlasting Minnesota in overtime, outlasting Vancouver in overtime, outlasting Edmonton in overtime. And last night, it's another comeback win, you know, on the road. So I just absolutely, absolutely love it. Defensively, you know, yeah. McCarte's.
It was a gritty game.
Not so sharp.
You know, it's not going to always be like that. Onanen, you know, didn't play the best to me. You know, at times he looked decent, and other times he was just average.
Yeah,
you know?
A lot of rebounds, dude. Yes. That will kill you in the playoffs.
Yes. So, you know, that was one thing where I'm like, dang, man, come on, Onanen. Like, I wanted you to play out your mind just so we can come out here and hype you back up. But we got the win, 4-3.
Got the win, 4-3. Energy around the team is fantastic. See if they can keep it up. See if they can win an eighth in a row. They will next play the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're not playing till I think it's Friday evening. So that'll be the next time that we see the Avs. They will be back at Ball Arena for that in front of the faithful. 7 o'clock puck dropping. And then how about on Sunday? It's a matinee at noon against the Pittsburgh Penguins. May have to go to that game.
Mm.
New, because I, you know, my 5-year-old has not been to an Avs game yet.
Yeah,
and now I know he can sit through because I bought him to the Nuggets, and that may be tailor made for my kiddo at noon there. And that game is going to be on TNT. So not sure about the blackouts, how that's going to work on Sunday, but fun little stretch of hockey here for the Colorado Avalanche, no doubt about it. All right, if the Broncos, Phil. If the Broncos, we haven't talked about the Broncos yet. We're 1 hour into the show, haven't talked about the Denver Broncos yet. But I'm asking a question here, all right? If they do not get their house in order, are the Denver Broncos on the verge of losing their crown as the king of Denver sports? I'm going to have that conversation with you coming up next.